Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and I am so excited to be back live with our first podcast since our 10-month hiatus. And during that time, I have had two knee replacements and a job change and some exciting projects going on with Brain Bonanza, one of which is bringing the Spark podcast back. So we'll be adding new content with powerful people who are creating and sharing ideas that may be the spark to ignite the changes in your life. So thank you so much for being here, either live or downloading this podcast. As I said, it's exciting to be back with you. And tonight, I'm bringing back a guest who has been with us before. She is a Renaissance woman who is always learning, always growing, and expanding her toolkit, so to speak, and building from her life experience to empower others so that they can also have more positive life experience. And her name is Marianne Hess. She is currently a women's empowerment coach where she helps clients gently facilitate deeper connections with yourself and your loved ones as you take steps for your highest evolution. She is also an awakened energy coach, founding member of Essence Coaches LLC, a Reiki master, transformational prayer practitioner, an ordained minister, a licensed chakra dance facilitator, which I might be able to do now that I have two new knees, and more. She is an authentic, compassionate, and passionate woman committed to healing and to empowering women. I am so grateful to have her as my first guest on this new series of Spark Podcast. Thank you so much, Marianne Hess, for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a joy to be back with you, and I'm so glad that you have had the changes go on in your life that you have to have you more mobile and also propelling you forward in your life with the job changes, et cetera, to exciting projects. I just think that's wonderful, and talk about evolution. You're going for it, girl.
Well, thank you. That's exciting to hear from you, Marianne. There's so many different things that we could talk about, and we may get to tonight, and I will tell my listeners again that we will have time for questions with Marianne. So we're going to talk a little bit first about her journey with parenting parents. And then I'll give the number again to open the phone lines. I also have a chat room open. If you'd prefer to chat a question, you may do that as well. So, Marianne, let's start with the newer role that you have. Since I spoke with you here on Spark last, you are a women's empowerment coach. What happened in your life that led you to become a women's empowerment coach?
Well, as many things in my life, it started way long time ago. I am a Midwest farmer's daughter, and I learned early on when I was growing up as a wee one that my mother ruled the roost, and I had better pay attention and give my power to her. In my little brain, thinking if I didn't do that, I wouldn't survive. And that interpretation in my little brain propelled me forward in my life to give my power away almost everywhere. And so it colored my life in a way that wasn't really the best thing for me, because I really wasn't in touch with who I was, doing what truly I came here to do, and was disempowered all the time. Kind of felt like a cork on an ocean kind of bobbing about, because I was going with the wind of, you know, whoever I was around, you know, tuning in, okay, which way is the wind blowing? Better be, you know, up the wind here. So it was one of those things where finally I had had enough, and I was led with my internal guidance enough with what I was doing to the Awaken Coaches training, and learned that I had this power within me all the time. And it just reinforced that I do know what I'm doing, and it's okay to trust that. And from there, started realizing as I was talking to women, how many of them kind of kowtow, especially in their relationships or intimate relationships, but, you know, also in their work life or maybe with friends like I had done as well. And knowing deep within myself, when I left teaching in, oh gosh, this was the mid-80s, and I left Iowa at that time because I got a divorce at that time, and I was driving cross-country from Iowa to Arizona, and I just said to my girlfriend who was helping me to move, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, but I do know it's going to have something to do with helping women know they have a choice, no matter what their current circumstances. And that has remained true for me. So it's kind of built in with me, but I didn't have the confidence or the know-how or whatever for several years after that. So it's something that, and especially dealing with my mother, because I was just always having that sense, kind of that nagging thought in the back of my mind, or hear her voice about things that would kind of override at times. So it took a lot of work and a lot of self-healing and a couple of trips into Peru as well, with shifting my energy and being with healers to really get in touch with how to be in my power. And so I'm here to help women really be in their feminine power appropriately. And as they do that, that gives everybody around them permission to be in theirs. It doesn't take away from anyone else, but it allows them to truly then tap into who they are and give the gifts that they're here to give.
And that is so wonderful when people can go inside and discover the purpose, or one of the purposes that they have here, and to share the gifts that are unique to them. So thank you for being at that point and for stepping into that power. Could you talk a little bit about what you do as a women's empowerment coach?
Well, I talk with women and tune in, because I realized as I was doing my Awaken training, I have always had this ability to really tune into people's energy, and I just kind of see things, particularly in regard to relational dynamics. And I think a lot of this was also prompted with how aware I needed to be around my mother, and then, of course, with others. So I was really kind of in tune with that. So I really use my intuition as well as energetic healing techniques, as well as traditional coaching things, depending on what's going on with the woman, to really tune in and guide them and facilitate them. I never tell anybody what to do, but I'm there with, this is what it feels like to me, this is what I'm getting if you'd like to know, and let's go forward doing these kinds of things if you're game, and then teaching them how to tune into that eventually. So we kind of get really clearing stuff out from them that's in the way. And then once that happens, they get clear. They start getting really these wonderful insights about what they really want, everything becomes really crystal clear for them because we work in a different energetic frequency. Einstein is famous for saying that no problem can be solved at the level at which it was created. So we work in a little higher frequencies, and when you're doing that, everything becomes really crystal clear. It's quite wonderful. And from that vantage point, I facilitate them to go forward, and we talk about their next steps based on what they're really getting that they really want. And then I'm there to help empower them, giving them permission along the way because fear can come up and we deal with that. And then eventually they're tuning into their own insights, their own intuitions, and sailing on their own. My job is actually for them to eventually fire me. They don't need me anymore. They're empowered on their own. And it's smooth sailing, and they're thriving, and they are just happy campers, fulfilled in all aspects of their lives.
And I think that that's exciting to when you talk about the ultimate goal being for them to fire you as a coach, that they're ready to step out on their own. And that it initially can be scary, especially when we haven't known how to do that in the past. And so to have that safe space to do that is wonderful. And we'll talk a little bit later about some other ways to connect with you and to learn with you. So what I want to do now is switch gears a little bit and move into the focus of today's show, which is on how to stay in your personal power when you're parenting a parent, because there are so many of us who are struggling or challenged with that process. And it's something that's never been taught, that the culture has shifted as with the generations, because in the veteran generation, which for the baby boomers, that's our parents, their parents lived close by or as they were older lived with them. And that was one way of spending time with our parents as they were aging and dealing with health challenges. And even then there were not a lot of support resources other than the family could support each other. And now with families being so spread out, with the nursing home situation or the advanced care communities that offer different levels of health support based on the needs of parents, that's also costly. So there are a lot of decisions that need to be made, and it can be extremely overwhelming. And having my mother in this situation of how hard it is to go through these changes and have your children talk to you like they're the parents, and that is so frustrating because she's still an adult, she's still our mom. So it's a very complex issue. So if we could switch gears and take a look at how you got to where you are with your mother's situation first. So can we start there?
Okay. It was quite a journey and quite a dance, especially given our history together where we pretty much locked horns all the time. And then the shift into, because she had dementia as well, so the shift into, you know, not sure who I was dealing with sometimes when I would go to see her or I was around her, is she there or is this some other, you know, situation happening because of the dementia? Is she in some other time frame? So my heart, first of all, was really opened very organically as I watched her struggle, you know, to remember or to do something. You know, sometimes, you know, later on there would be things physically trying to do something as well, and my heart just really cracked open and would go out to her. And so that was one aspect of it. But staying in my power was a self-practice where I really had to prepare before I would see her and then have some little reminders if something would start to trigger while I was with her, to just receiving a deep breath, just taking a deep breath and going into that space of a loving acceptance of where we were now, aware and realizing that it's okay, and not having the wishing it was different kinds of things. It's just, this is where we are, and staying present in the moment. Staying present in the moment allowed me to not bring baggage with me, and just dealing with what was happening right there, right then. And it's one of those things I would practice. Some things I can suggest for people when they're not immediately with their loved one too, to kind of prepare, is one thing, just to tune into your body. Just focus on your body and just really do kind of a scan from your toes all the way to the top of your head, not to try to change anything or control anything, but just being aware and accepting of what's going on in your body. You know, breathing, of course, into any tight spots, just kind of relax, noticing things. It's just kind of a non-judgmental kind of exercise, just noticing that. And then you're very impartial about the observation about that, probably just practicing with your own body and your thoughts about that, just allowing them to be neutral. And as you practice doing that, we find in studies that actually been done about this, that you respond to other challenges and difficulties when you're around other people with more peace, because you've had this practice of that non-judgmental interpretation of things. So just something you might want to try practicing for those of you on your own before you're around a loved one that could assist. Other things I found helpful when I wasn't around my mother was just to really take breaks, kind of changing my mental channel, because even when I would leave, she was in an assisted living facility for a time, and even when I would leave there, you know, it would be the impression and whatever happened would be with me. It was kind of a heaviness almost, because I was helpless to do anything really, but yet I wanted to be there for her, supporting her however I could, but that can wear on you. And so another thing that I practice that may be of help to people is called wishing someone well. Just thinking of two people, not your loved one necessarily, but other people, and just wishing them happiness. You know, every 10 seconds to wish someone else happiness. It just takes your attention, and of course your thoughts follow your attention, and that determines your peace of mind. So changing that channel just creates a little different sensation within you and other kinds of peace. And there's a certain warmth about that. You're extending love and appreciation and wonderful thoughts to someone else. You just change the channel consciously. And that helps to kind of break that. I found it was kind of a constant thing with me, or I could be. So it would just kind of break that, not that I was not thinking about her or not caring or not taking care of things, but it just allowed that mental break to kind of bring my body back to more of an ease as I would leave the facility. So just another thing that may help people. And, of course, I always prepared before I went to the facility or was around my loved one or around my mom, just really breathing deeply into the belly and centering myself, putting a grounding cord from the base of my spine to the center of the earth, bringing in gold light all the way down through me, and consciously just putting my hand on my heart and breathing into my heart, really activating the love and the peace and the joy, that those heart energies, and allowing that to expand out from me and putting an energetic bubble or boundary, I should say, around myself before I would even leave the house to go and be with her. That prepared me, allowed me to be really full of love, and then while I was there, just really being conscious of the acceptance of this is the way it is, not trying to wish it was some other way or trying to change something, and being present with what was in the moment. Those are just some things that I experienced. And as we went through the various stages and then her passing, you know, there's a lot of support groups I would recommend, especially after the passing, so that you can decompress and talk out some of those feelings, because it takes a while for those, and I'm still going through it actually because it just happened in May, but to really dissipate those things. And when things come up, especially after a passing, to allow yourself to cry or whatever you feel to do, don't hold it in, and just do it. Allow yourself to feel that fully, because the grief process is a process and it does take time. And to have that be okay, again, an acceptance and a loving acceptance of whatever you're feeling.
Those are a lot of powerful strategies and approaches to help stay in that space of power, that loving space, and recognizing that one of my favorite mantras is, it is what it is and it becomes what we make it, that whatever's happening is happening. And we get into the why it's happening and all of those kinds of mental conversations that can take us in a very negative direction often. And the strategy that you shared with breathing and acceptance and being able to be in the moment, to be present in the moment, and to come from that space of love in the relationship is very, very powerful. Was there anything that you did? You shared early in this interview that you had some challenges with your mother's being in control and being powerful when you were younger. Were there any changes that happened with your relationship later in her life and your life?
Yes. As I became more in my power, even before the dementia piece happened, we started to relate to one another more as what I call equals in my brain, in that way, and there was more of an appreciation for each other rather than the power struggle. And because I was working on myself and doing these energetic exercises and energetic boundaries, et cetera, the things that used to trigger me just didn't. I was aware of them. I would see them. I would notice them. But I didn't take them in. And they didn't bother me for days on end like they used to. It was like, oh, I see. That's her, you know, whatever, that pattern. But I didn't react to it. It was just, oh, okay, Mom. You know, I didn't have to say anything about it. I didn't have to engage. It was just whatever it was, and I could just go about my day without carrying that with me. So that was a blessed relief, and it allowed us to be closer. And, of course, as the process went along, she actually volunteered. She wanted to go to assisted living, so there wasn't any kind of hassle around that, whatever. I am the only child, so here I am dealing with, okay, here's 50 years in this house, let's go through things. And that was a wonderful blessing because I was able to ask questions about things that I had never asked before as we went through, you know, who's this and what happened with that and what's this, where's that from? And I learned a lot about who she was as a child, which gave me another perspective, and I had a lot more compassion for her. And then I learned more about my parents' relationship, because my parents were divorced. Actually, my dad left 2 days after I got married in 1975. So I learned a lot more about, I got another perspective on that relationship as we went through different things, just by various comments and pictures I would ask about and so forth. I got a whole different perspective. And that gave me a whole other learning about myself and my relationships that I'd had throughout my life and why they looked the way they did and the patterns that I picked up and carried on around that. So it was a huge learning and a wonderful beginning of a healing as there was more what I'll call equal ground or common ground of things. And then as the health situation, I would do a dance. It was like, okay, do you want to me to handle this? What are you thinking about this? Would you like to do that? And I waited for her to just hand it over. I didn't try to force anything. I just would be in the innocent curiosity of, I see this kind of thing, blah, 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 or this. Did you want to do something about this? Oh, no, you handle it. So whenever she would turn it over, then, okay, I'll go ahead and do that. But I didn't do it until she was ready. I didn't try to force something. You know, I would see various things and just be innocently curious. You know, I'm noticing this, you know, does that bother you? Or, you know, this kind of thing. So I was very respectful of her, what would I say, of her power, but that's not really the right word, of her dignity. So that whenever she still wanted to be in charge of something, that was just fine. You know, and if I saw that there was some kind of danger or some kind of thing I was concerned about and she wasn't ready to turn it over, I would make sure that I would talk with the staff at Assisted Living about that. And I'm noticing this, she doesn't want it, so that everybody was on the same page and aware. That was one of the principal things I did as an advocate, was to make sure that the doctor, the staff, and me, we were all on the same page, so that I would check in with the nurse every week. And I would visit her once a week as well, sometimes more. But I would always check in, are you noticing this? You know, what have you noticed? So that we were all observing and all on the same page which in the communications of everything, which helped a great deal when it came down to the end of things.
And the fact, I think, that you had come to that common ground and to have had the chance to learned so much from her as you went through things and asked questions. And it's definitely a learning opportunity, especially in the situation here where she knew that it was time and she recognized and was ready to do that. I think sometimes in that well-intentioned mind of some adult children, that we want to keep our parents with us, and sometimes that does mean that the communication can come across as they're a child, that they, and if they have their mental faculties and are able to make those decisions, to recognize that, you know what, I've managed my diabetes for 40 years, folks, and I've done fine, and I recognize I'm older, and I like my ice cream, and so even the kinds of food changes and diet changes and as health shifts to say, and I do with my mother, it's, you know, your children all wish you well and they want you to be around them. It's absolutely okay to say thank you for your opinion and I love you and I'm going to choose to do it this way because I enjoy mm-hmm. it and that's okay. I think, yeah, sometimes that to recognize that when you take all of the things that someone enjoys out of life, especially when they live alone, that it can get very, very frustrating. And as long as they're not physically harming themselves or making, you know, a slew of negative, dangerous choices, that to have the conversations in that respectful way, that was something that I heard you say several times about, you know, respecting dignity and asking respectfully. And recognizing that, you know, I'd love you to be here for many more years. I talk to my mother every week, and we lost my father to pancreatic cancer probably 6 or 7 years ago and went through the house. And I have six sisters, so we're a large group. And my mother decided she didn't need the big house and wanted to sell it. And so we had a sort of auction, a family auction with different items that she was fine parting with. And she said it was hard to watch some of those things go, although she knew it was going to her kids. And mm-hmm. she gave first option to the person who gave her the painting or gave her whatever it was as a gift. If they wanted it back, they could have it at no cost. Otherwise, if it was something that they said, no, that's fine, then we would do some bidding. And that way, mom got some money to use for different things. And we got to keep pieces that we wanted, and the rest went into a large garage sale that we had for her. And it's hard to think when we're younger about what that might feel like. And I think empathy can be so powerful if we can just take a moment to look at it from that other perspective and to hear ourselves from the perspective of someone else. Because I think that can be challenging, that we have great intentions and we sometimes don't hear how that comes across, especially to a parent.
Mm-hmm. And also, I found an interesting dance between, I wanted to, you know, whatever was going on, maintaining her dignity as much as possible and whatever it is she still wanted to handle, and balancing that with the safety issues. Because, you know, there are some safety issues as people get older, mobility, you know, and then the dementia safety, I mean, all kinds of various things like that. So balancing that out in terms of what's the, and I would always think to myself, okay, what's the best way to handle this? Because this is what I'm noticing while she was still in her home and various things like that. So that was something to take into consideration. Plus, I had seen my great aunt and the way she was treated by her husband, who had put her in a nursing home and then brought her home and then decided he couldn't do that and she needed to be back in the nursing home. But before he put her back, he decided to sell everything, and they had an auction on the lawn, and she had to watch everything being sold before she went to the nursing home. And I thought that was such a cool thing to do. And that has always stuck with me. She was my favorite aunt, and my heart just broke. You know, I just couldn't believe he was doing that. Anyway, but I had, and there was nothing I could do about that. It wasn't anything up to me about anything. But I was remembering that as I was dealing with my mom. So I was very careful about belongings and this and that, and asking, what would you like to do about such and such? You know, or, you know, I'm noticing this. Do you want to do blah, blah, blah? Or how do you feel about this? And then when she got to, like I said, when she got to the point, I don't want to deal with this anymore, that's fine. Okay, so I'll do that. And then I would be very respectful to report back to her. Like she would turn various things over to me, and then I'd come back and say, you know, I checked with da-da-da-da-da, and this is what I found out. So she always felt included and knew what was happening.
And I think that is so important, again, because that sense of control or the loss of control as we're unable to drive anymore, we're unable to walk stairs anymore, that the physical changes, because inside we don't see ourselves as older or aging or elderly. We just begin to lose our ability to do things, and it's frustrating. Mm-hmm. And I think the way that we, again, communicate about that in that from that space of love and compassion. Because we don't see our parents as being older when we talk to them on the phone. When we, my mom is still, in my mind, the mom that I had when she was 40. And so to help her ask for help, that's been a challenge because she doesn't want to bother her kids. You all have your own lives. You're all busy. I'm like, Mom, if you don't let us know what you need, how are we to know what you need? You know, if you need to have someone drive you someplace to get your haircut or to get things done, because she does not have a driver's license anymore. And so we forget to ask as we're talking about what's going on in our lives, and she's filling us on different, what's going on in different sisters' lives. And so, you know, the hard thing is that asking for help, I think, especially from the veteran generation, even I think some of the older baby boom generation.
And also, there's a huge difference I'm finding because my father is still here. And he's 94. And there's a big difference between the way he's handling things and the way my mom handled things. And she was at the point of, she recognized when things were, you know, she couldn't do this or that. And so she, I don't want to do this anymore. You do this. And she would ask for help a lot of times. Whereas my dad, a whole different deal. You know, he's a guy, he wants to still be in charge, that strong guy, you know, the man, and all of that. So I have to really tread lightly with him very delicate situation who he's still living on his own and is in a senior facility, but it's only senior housing. It's not assisted living. It's just a one, you know, ground floor kind of thing. And so I have to really be careful how I phrase things or what I, you know, do, et cetera, and just lightly ask. And then if it's a no, I just leave it alone, you know. And I do get to know the people that are in charge of the facility, have a little chat with them, you know, again, kind of, you know, this is what I'm noticing. Are you noticing these kinds of things? Even though they don't check on them like an assisted living, but they're doing a few more visits, et cetera, because I can't be there. She's 50 miles away. Not that that's a long way, but I don't get there as often as I would in town. So I just make sure that there's other people aware, even if we're not really doing anything, but we're just kind of watching, you know, just kind of watching without him knowing or losing any kind of dignity or any kind of feeling like he's being watched, you know, or something. But,
exactly.
You know, it's a safety thing. And it's also from, you know, I don't know, I should maybe say generalized, but for man, you know, might be more ego kind of whatever. But it's just, you know, so that they don't feel encroached upon, but, you know, eyes are just, you know, aware and just noticing, you know, so that if there is something. And by and large, I'm finding, too, that he might tell some of the staff something, or they'll be able to ask him, you know, do you need this or that, or would you like me to go do X, Y, Z? And he's more prone to allow them to do it than he is me, for whatever reason. So I just let that go as long, again, as we're on the same page. And we're communicating about things. We're all kind of in the loop. And, yeah, but it's a tricky thing because I at first was feeling, all, you know, feelings a little bit hurt of, I can't help my dad. I love my dad. I want to do something for him. But if he doesn't want me to do it, that's not going to work. So
right.
Finding other ways to just take him his favorite black raspberry pie, which he loves, you know, finding that whenever I go to see him, finding it from someplace. Some people have frozen black raspberries in their freezer and they'll make me a pie so I can take it to him, whatever. You know, little things like that that I know he loves. Just doing those kinds of things, continuing to do that, and then just being watchful. But it's a whole different animal. It's a whole different dance with my father than it was with my mother. Very interesting.
And I think you're right. The gender in that generation also makes a difference. That men are, I'm the strong provider. I'm the father. And both my father and father-in-law died of cancer. While they were still, they were retired. They were active prior to the cancers. And so that was a very different situation. They both were in their early 70s when they passed. So both my mother and my mother-in-law are living alone. My mother is in a, she still has, I think, three steps she has to go up. Otherwise, the rest of her apartment, two-bedroom apartment, is handicapped accessible, and she uses a cane from time to time. My mother, and she has a lifeline, which we're very grateful that she has some way to contact someone in an emergency. My mother-in-law, on the other hand, has, oh gosh, six or seven steps, both front and back, in a two-story house, and laundry in the basement, and yeah, and we get nervous about her falling, and she doesn't have, well, she has a pacemaker, then the pacemaker will go off, and it's like, well, that's not the same thing as a lifeline as when you fall, because she did have an episode where the ambulance was called because her pacemaker was going off. And so, again, she was born in the Depression in a large family. She's very independent. And because she's not my mother, it's a harder conversation for me to have and for my husband to have. And he's an only child. And so, you know, he says, I can try to have a conversation with her. And she's just like, oh, you know, it's no big deal. So what you're talking about having people check, her niece now lives on a farm near the community. A member of the ambulance crew is an EMT down the street, and they have a daughter that's the same age as our son, and so they'll stop and visit. And so you're right, having people who will check or who are available if we, because we're also about an hour away, so mm-hmm. that we can call and say, can you go check because she's not answering her phone, or she needs something and we're not available, she can call. She has some people she can call who are mm-hmm. close, and I think that that is very important. Because, again, they may talk to them and they may, they'll see it as a visit more than they're checking in
mm-hmm.
on, you know, to see how you're doing.
Yeah, I know. At one point, I actually scheduled my mom's friends, this is when she's still in her house, to go and just visit. You know, certain days, you know, they'd show up. Because the doctor was a little concerned about her being by herself, et cetera, but she wasn't quite ready for the assisted living thing. He said, I don't need to go there. I'm a little kinky. So so I just got a hold of her friends, and I said, you know, this is the situation, and not to, you know, go behind her back or whatever, but, you know, for safety and et cetera. And, of course, they loved her dearly, too. So, you know, could you just stop by on Monday, you know, and can you just stop by on Tuesday? And so they kind of had a round robin of things, and my mom loves to visit with people. So, again, like you said, she saw it as a visit. She kind of knew on some level it was a check-in, but she didn't mind because she got to visit with the people because she was no longer driving, so she really couldn't get out, so she missed the social piece. So
right.
It all worked out. But I actually called them all up, and I had a schedule. I said, can you go on this, you know, whatever. And then if they couldn't, they would let me know, and I'd be sure that I went over that day. Just so we had, you know, some consistency and kind of watching things because she was forgetting to turn off the stove. I mean, she would tell me these things. Oh, I burned a pan on the stove. She forgot it was on, you know, that kind of thing. So we just wanted to make sure. So, you know, friends and neighbors, you know, just stopping by can really be a lifesaver.
Oh, absolutely. And my mother-in-law still drives, so she goes out and gets groceries she's active with the Legion, and so she does still get out a couple times a week, although there are periods where it could be 2 or 3 days and she doesn't see anybody. And so she's still... she's still pretty alert. Every once in a while, she'll tell us the same story a couple times in the same visit. Mm-hmm. Although she still cooks and bakes and those types of things and does very well. She has a gas stove, which concerns me a little bit. That if a pilot light goes out, that hopefully she'll catch that. And I love your idea of scheduling visits. You know, that someone is either calling or stopping by, so that she's got contact almost every day. And that may be a strategy, thank you very much, that we use as my mother-in-law ages. Because, again, my husband's an only child. But with my mother, I have two sisters who live in the same community. So they can stop by or check in. And I call her on a Friday every week, and I'm not sure if my sisters have other days. But we may get to that point, too, of saying, you know, just pick a night you call mom just to check in and share what's going on or something, because I know she looks forward to our calls, our talks on Fridays. So, and if I don't call, then she wonders what's wrong, because Friday.
And another
o'clock.
Thing, too, that was great about the friends that would stop in and visit my mom, some of them would bring games. And so, she was using her brain a little bit, and they were playing games, which would not only pass the time, but also help the brain. So, and it was fun.
Yeah.
You know, so that mm-hmm. was a real godsend as well.
And we were a game-playing family growing up, being a large family. My mom mm-hmm. was a stay-at-home mom for most of our childhood, and so we grew up playing games in the form of inexpensive entertainment. And so now that's our holiday gatherings. In addition to eating, we play games. And she has a game night every Friday night with a woman who does daycare in the community who lost her mother a number of years ago. And so she comes over, my sister and brother-in-law, and sometimes we'll go down that same Friday night. And every Friday night, though, it's game night at mom's for whoever wants to come.
Oh, good.
And yes, and I think that you're right, that when you can have that fun and doing something that you enjoy, that helps to keep
mm-hmm.
you alert. It's
mm-hmm.
a great way to pass time and to be together.
How old is your mom?
I will be 54 this year, so she will be 75.
Okay.
So, yeah, so she's still, I think she's still on the young side.
I was going to say, yeah, my mom was 93 when she passed.
Mm-hmm. And because she's managed her diabetes so well, she was recently diagnosed with a stiff heart, which they said for your age is normal.
Mm-hmm.
Here are some things that you can do. And my mother-in-law had some swelling in her leg and happened to be in the hospital when she had her first heart attack. And they recognized with her that it was, she had a valve issue, an atrial. The issue that they discovered that she had was the same thing they figured probably took the lives of two of her sisters and a brother. They all had, quote, heart attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's genetic. And so because they were able to put a pacemaker in, she's had one episode since. Although had she not been in the hospital when that first episode happened, she would have been home by herself. Would have been a very different story.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very grateful that she did go to the hospital and was there when it happened. So I think being able to manage those health issues and to make sure that all of the other paperwork and the decisions that you talked about with, you know, when are you ready to go into assisted living, having the conversations around the end of life. We all know that my mother has a DNR order, and she has arranged for, I am her medical power of attorney, and she's got insurance to cover her funeral, and we know she wants to be cremated, and so all of those kinds of conversations we've had with her. And my mother-in-law, she's got her plot, and she'll be taken care of, and so having those conversations can be hard. I know we kind of joked that my father-in-law left us a couple days before we were going to have the funeral planning conversation.
Oh dear!
But he'd always change the subject. And so, yeah, he came home from the hospital and was there, I think only a day or so, and he asked my mother-in-law to leave the window ajar in January. And she went to check on him next morning, and he was gone. So he didn't want to have the talk. He's like, just don't put me in an expensive box nobody's ever going to see again. That was the only thing we knew that he wanted. So, those conversations, too, whether you can have them with a parent or they can put their wishes in writing about their final arrangements, especially if you have siblings who may disagree on, you know, especially in the state of Iowa, at least, it only takes one child to say no to cremation and that stops cremation, even though that's what the parent wanted.
Hmm.
So, and that because my mother wants to be cremated, that was something that she wanted every one of her kids to know. And even though I have one who's not happy with it, a sister who'd rather it not happen, she at this point has said, that's what mom wants, so I'll go with it. So my mom's like, okay, good, because one plot in the church cemetery, and I have permission to have my ashes put on top of your dad. And so we laugh about that, too.
And you bring up an excellent point. You have an excellent point for you as well, because we want to make sure that all of us have our end of life things in order. Because sometimes we let that go, thinking, "Well, it's not time yet." Well, excuse me, but you never know. And so it's always good to make sure that you've taken care of your affairs as well.
And that's a very good point, because whether you have children or not, you know, understanding some things about a trust, because my son is the only grandson on my husband's side, helping my mother-in-law understand the value of putting the deed to the house in a trust, or to put monies in a trust for our son versus having it go through a will and the state and all of those things. That can be so complicated, all that financial stuff. And really what she wants is she wants all of her assets to go to her grandson. Mm-hmm. And so like, how do we help her maximize that and have those conversations when financial planning is not, for a lot of us, is not on our, you know, we enjoy doing list. And so that is a very good point, whether it's your will, who's going to be the guardian of your kids. And while all my sisters asked my husband and me to be their guardians, I think only one put it in writing.
Yeah, so it's very important. I mean, having gone through all the paperwork, it's, yeah, you got to make sure, and all the laws, and they change, and this and that. It can be a little bit of a dicey thing. So being prepared as much as possible, as much as everything in writing as much as possible, and thinking it through, and then making sure that everybody knows where the papers are, you know, all that kind of thing. I know it sounds simple, but it's really important, because when these things happen, like when my mom passed, you know, she was pretty organized about stuff, but still there were tons of decisions to make. And, you know, okay, and where was this thing, where was that thing? And, you know, even months later, you're dealing with paperwork and this and that. Okay, where were those files? So it's important for someone to know where they are and how to access them.
And that does bring up a good point, because while my mother-in-law has a lawyer, I'm not sure my husband knows where her insurance paperwork is, or if he has a key to her safe deposit box. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, thank you. I need to check on that.
Yeah, those little things, you know, because when the person passes, you're in such a state. I mean, you just, you know, as you know, when that happens, you just, you know, you're kind of in this fog. And, you know, so as much of that as you can know ahead of time, so it just creates less stress for you, because you're already going through. I mean, I was in shock and grief and whatever, because my mom passed within 2 days. It was a quick thing, not expected, you know, kind of deal. And it was like, okay, you know, yes, I do know some things, and, you know, it was challenging. But at least I had as much as I could possibly know, and then I had to make other decisions. But anything you can do to help your kids know where things are and what to do, it's so much easier for them, because they're going to be going through such emotional upheaval that it'll really help them.
Yes. Yes. So whether it's a living will, it's a do not resuscitate, whatever those medical forms are that you can do ahead of time, and communicate to the kids so they'd see it before the moment where they have to make the decision, or the moment they read the form that you sign. If you've never had that discussion, it's very, very important to take the time to talk about it. Because in our culture, we don't talk about dying.
Well, and the other piece, too, that I didn't realize is that you've got to, what happens with bank accounts, with powers of attorney and those kinds of things, because upon death, that power of attorney ends. So things can be frozen. And then how are you going to pay bills on these, you know? I mean, it's just, you know, things you got to think ahead about.
Well, and I didn't realize that. If you have, well, I have a medical power of attorney, a different sister has the financial power of attorney. And knowing that freezes accounts, you're right, because bills still need to be paid and things need to
be. You've got to
be
able to transfer that over before that freezes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
And luckily, while my mom was in the coma, I was talking to the financial guy, and he alerted me, and I'm like, okay, I got to go move money so that when this happens, and we didn't know when it was going to be, but we knew it was going to be soon, you know, a matter of days. Like, okay, let's get this organized so that I can continue to handle things that come in, et cetera, without that being frozen.
Oh, my goodness.
So thank
That's
goodness. Thank goodness I had a heads up. I wouldn't have known.
And most of us wouldn't. And so part of, I think, staying in your personal power when you're parenting a parent is asking the hard questions and also empowering yourself with information.
Absolutely. I ask questions upon questions upon questions to people, you know, were probably getting sick of me, but you know what? I don't care, because I needed to know. And it was also on the medical side. You know, people would come in with various things, and I would ask questions. I mean, here we were in the hospital room when she broke her hip in April, and somebody came in with this hypodermic needle, and I said, what is that? And, well, this is a pneumonia vaccine. I said, why are you giving her that? Well, you know, because she's going to have surgery. But I said, she's fine. Why would you be giving her this? Well, we don't have to. It's optional. But if I hadn't been sitting there, they would have done it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to watch what's going on, and then you have to question, what is this and why is this? And I would be there, make a point to be there when the doctor did rounds. I had to wait quite a while because you never knew quite when he was going to be there. But I had a list of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And there were things that he wasn't noticing, or because he wasn't there all the time. He just popped in for 5 minutes, right? So, and what about this? And what about that? Oh, you know. So I was really an advocate and had to watch out. Because you do have to watch over when you get into some of those situations and be there and ask questions of staff and various people who sometimes can get irritated about it. You know, I just kept asking because this is my mom and I want to know.
Yes,
and so I didn't let their attitude of, well, we usually do this. I said, I don't care, but you usually do. What I'm asking is this.
Yes, yes. Well, Marianne, it has, believe it or not, we're down to our last 4 minutes. And so it has been a very informative conversation, and I think some very powerful information and strategies for those of us who are dealing with aging parents and for those of us who are parents and planning for as we age with our own kids. And so, excuse me, as we wrap up, I know you have a special offer for our listeners today, and I want to give you an opportunity to share that.
Oh, I'll just real quickly say that I have a free gift for everyone on my website. It's a harmonious relationships kit, and it helps you to, in many ways, relieving yourself of any kind of troublesome emotions or situations that are kind of bugging you, to get that cleared away so that you can move forward in your relationships for a happier time. If you're coming from a place of, today we're working with this and going forward versus baggage that you're carrying with you, so that you really can have a more harmonious relationship. And there's lots of things and tools on there. You get a series of 4 emails spaced out with various exercises and things to assist you, energetic healings as well, and practices you can do to stay in your power. There's a whole ton of stuff there. You can just go to MarianneHess.com and put in your email address, and you're off and running to get that. So that's what I wanted to say about that. And then did you want me to do any closing remarks about parenting a parent?
Okay. Yes.
The things that I would really recommend for people, please don't do it alone. You know, there are support groups. Please take breaks. Even if you're the primary caregiver and they're living in your home or whatever it is, taking care of yourself doesn't mean you don't love your parents. You can't be any good for them or the rest of your family or anybody else if you're not taking care of yourself. Please, no guilt about taking a break. No guilt about going to the grocery store and taking 2 hours to come back, as long as, you know, they're safe and whatever. No guilt about taking a day off where you just take a break from all of it. And just remember to really deep breathe and be kind to yourself. It's a difficult, it's a challenging thing to parent, and you've got to still take care of yourself first in order to really support them in the best possible way. So please don't do it alone, and please take breaks and take care of yourself.
Marianne, thank you so much. The time flew by. And for those of you who are listening and hoping to ask a question, since we have only a minute left, I know that Marianne, well, I will ask, would you be interested in coming back in the future to talk with my listeners again?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be happy to.
Thank you. And if you have a question about the topic of staying in your own personal power when parenting a parent, you can connect with Marianne on her website. The link is in the show notes, as well as a link to her LinkedIn profile. You can connect with her, absolutely download that Harmonious Relationships kit, and she's very happy to connect with you and to answer your questions. Marianne, thank you so much.
And you can email me as well. It's just Marianne@MarianneHess.com.
Thank you so much. Take care, everyone, and please take an action on something that you heard that may be a spark to ignite that positive solution in your life. Until next time, stay safe.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.